Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Askana for Law Office of Rajiv Askana, PC, immigration.com. Today is February 9th, Thursday, 12:30 p.m. This is a community conference call, which is conducted just to present information to the members of our community. This does not create an attorney-client relationship. Your voice is being recorded. If you don't wish to have your voice recorded, please stay silent. I encourage you to conceal your identity, make up your name. Don't have to give out your original name because these calls will be made publicly available. That said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to first answer all the questions that have been posted on the forums. Then time remaining, I will answer follow-up questions and the questions that have not been posted or are a follow-up. So new questions at the very end. I think we're going to have enough time for a few questions. I don't normally expect a lot of people during the middle of the day. I've been asked to start doing these calls over the weekend. That's kind of difficult for me. So I do the best I can. That's the reason we ask people to just go ahead and post their questions. That way they can listen at their leisure. That said, let me go to the questions that have been posted. The first question is from Andre Snail. Got their green card about 3 years ago, but noticed that in the marriage certificate which was submitted with the H-1 and the green card, there was an incorrect year. Month and date is correct. So accordingly, all the information entered on the green card papers is wrong. So the question is, what do we do to correct a green card that was issued more than 3 years ago? Here is what I suggest you do, sir. First of all, remember that this does not appear to be a major issue in the sense that it's not a deliberate misrepresentation of any kind. But you have the right approach in this day and year. It's a good idea to get all information about ourselves corrected in the government records. Here's what I advise you do. You contact your local congressman's office. Don't do it yourself. Don't get a lawyer. Contact your local congressman's office. How you do that, you go to congress.gov. Actually, if you go to immigration.com and do a search on the word congressman, C-O-N-G-R-E-S-S-M-A-N, congressman, you should pull up a document that tells you how to contact your congressman, including links to the congressman's, whereabouts and contact information based upon your zip code. So contact them. Let them know that you live in their area and that you have an immigration-related problem, okay? So they will direct you to one of the staffers who deals with immigration-related issues. Talk with them, explain to them what's going on. They should be able to liaison with various government agencies to collect this information for you, okay? Keep me informed. By the way, a few of you had asked me to also give my email address on LinkedIn, because people who try to contact me on or try to connect with me on LinkedIn could not. So my email address for LinkedIn is rskhanna, rskhanna at immigration.com, rskhanna at immigration.com. You can also use that email address to communicate with me. Let me know what's going on, okay? If your date gets corrected or if there's still an issue, drop me an email. I think going through the congressman would be the right thing to do. And Mads wants to know, I got my green card through a future employer. Now, the question is, this company says it's not in good health and might close down. So I did not join them. Now, am I going to have a problem? Okay, well, keep a record of some kind, whether it's a letter from the company or your emails to them that shows that you were available for the job, but they didn't have a job for you. Should be as much of a safety margin as you can create for yourself. There isn't much more you can do. Okay, so that's the way to handle the situation. I think it's going to be okay because if you have presented yourself and made yourself available for a job and they just don't have a job for you, what else can you do? Okay, one additional, and this may sound silly, step that I would take is I would get a job which is similar to the green card job with another company and keep some documentation that the two jobs were similar Again, this may sound silly for somebody who has not litigated cases, but if this matter ever came to litigation, it would look good that you were doing a similar job for a few months to a year with another employer, because this employer who sponsored you didn't have the kind of job that they had promised for you. Okay? So two things. Document that you were available, but the job was not, and document that you took a similar job somewhere else. And how do you document that? You can get a letter from the employer that you do work with. Lakshmi wants to know, she has a history, a very long history. I will not go into it. Simply, the bottom line is this. I see at least 1 year of a period when she was out of status, had an OPT but did not work. Then I see that there were, how many months? I think it was 10 months. Let me just double check. 10 months of unemployment benching on H1. So both these periods become a problem potentially for I-485, for AOS. Okay? Whether or not they know it, it doesn't matter. You have to be prepared that this is going to be a problem. So the best thing to do is really to step outside USA, get a new H-1 visa stamp, and come back and then apply for I-485. Now, your questions are, do you see any issues? Yes, I just mentioned that I do. Number two, I was on bench for 10 months, but the letter states that I was working. Well, that doesn't matter what they say. Okay, the fact is that you were not working, so you have to assume that you were out of status. Number three, would USCIS consider timely filing an application for change of status as a criteria to determine one or should be doing one? Okay. I think you have a problem anyway, but whichever way we look at it, there's a 12-month of non-work history, and then there's a 10-month of benching history. So I think going out and coming back in makes sense. Let's say after filing I-485 in Feb 2012, if I depart USA, that does not help you. You have to depart and come back before you file the 485. Okay? Do gaps in student visa status trigger RFE? Isn't there a question on the form I-485 about status? I don't know. If there is a question, then whether or not it gets triggered, it's irrelevant. Okay? I personally feel keep it straight and simple. Go outside and come back. Manish underscore 13, employment after green card. 485 filed in Jan 2012. Okay. New job offer joining date March 19th. With sponsoring employer for last 3 years. When can I start working for another employer after getting green card? I have a blog entry on this. Please read that. It is fairly lengthy and detailed. If you can't find it, send me an email to rskhana@immigration.com. R-S-K-H-A-N-N-A, my last name, my first initial Rajiv S, rskhana@immigration.com. H-1B extension till February 2015. If I'm not able to join the new employer due to no EADGC till March 19th, is the H-1 still valid? The H-1 can easily stay valid for 60 days if you have a reason not to join the employer. After that, it becomes a little bit more troublesome. So talk with your H-1 lawyers. They should be able to guide you through this. Disturbance of the call. Let me see if people can hear me just 1 second.
Yeah.
Could you guys hear me okay, or were you having trouble listening? You're not able to hear at all, or can you just hear intermittently? What's going on?
Yeah, intermittently. Actually, it looks like some train is going on.
There's a weird sound. There's like a knocking sound coming and going. I'm trying my best. Let's just hope so this does not happen. I'm going to leave the call unmuted. I ask you folks to please mute your own telephones. So you can always unmute and talk with me when things don't become clear, okay? So feel free to interrupt me if something is not clear. I'll go on with the call. We are recording anyway, so the recording should be clear, hopefully. Sinathi says, I have a 3-year diploma and 3-year degree from India. I want to do an EB2. See, I don't know what the bachelor's in computer application status is. You have a 3-year diploma after 10th standard, so that is definitely not a bachelor's degree. And it does not look to me that you can do an EB2 easily enough. You can see if you can qualify for EB2 under the, what do they call that particular, there's a category called exceptionally qualified individuals. I forget the exact name. But if you have 10 plus years of experience, there may be a possibility that you can try to look at that category for EB2. So that seems to be the only thing. But I don't see any other way to make you equivalent to a bachelor's degree. So you have 3-year diploma plus 3-year degree. Let's look at it one more time. Bachelor's in computer applications. So first you did a 3-year diploma after your 10th standard. Well, you know what? It may be, there may be a possibility here. Here is how it could work, and this is I've seen this before in engineering field. Sometimes what happens is the engineering degree, for example, mechanical engineering degree is 4-year degree. But if you have a 3-year mechanical engineering diploma, they will give you 1 year off. So basically, you will get a 4-year degree in 3 years because you already had a 3-year diploma. If your case is like that, you should be able to easily do an EB2. But if your case is not like that, I can't really predict how your case is working out. I don't know all the details. But if you have that sort of a situation where because of the diploma, you got 1 year off from the degree and the degree was really 4-year degree, you are okay. Otherwise, I don't see any other way of doing an EB2 except looking for the long shot, which is the 10-year experience requirement.
Rajiv, this is Srinath. That is
yes.
My question. I do have 10-plus years of experience, and my degree is not a 4-year degree. It is just a 3-year degree, and I completed that successfully. So, but
then,
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I do have 10-plus years of experience. I started working in, 1992. Mm-hmm. And, because I recently got this new position in my company, the company I'm working in, a month ago. So I think, I can collectively use all the experience because it's a new position till now, which will be more than 10 years.
See, there is a category, and you folks may want to make note of this, that there is a regulation that says if you have at least 3 of the following types of evidence,
okay,
you may be able to get EB2 exceptional ability classification. You still have to do a labor certification, but if you have 3 of the following, and most people I know have this,
okay.
Number one, an academic record showing at least a degree, diploma, certificate, or something like that, from a college, university, school, or other institution in your area, for example, IT, okay?
Yeah.
So you have some kind of a certificate you've got. So one thing you have. Two, evidence that you have 10 years of full-time experience in that occupation.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Three, evidence of membership in professional associations. Now, this is also simple enough for most people. Okay? You don't have any more information than this. This is a very, very seldom used category.
Yeah.
But I would argue any association should be okay, even if you get into any kind of a voluntary or a paid association for the IT industry. And if you do it tomorrow, you still qualify because it doesn't require that you must have had it for 10 years.
Okay.
So these three things almost anybody can get. On top of that, they only need 3, but there are other things also you can get. A license to practice, which is not required, or a certification for that profession. I don't know if a Microsoft certification would count, but something like that. We could always, because these are such vague criteria, it helps to argue anything that you can.
Mm-hmm.
Evidence that you had a very high salary or other remuneration, which demonstrates exceptional ability. People ask me, what does that mean, high salary? Your guess is as good as mine, okay? And the last thing is evidence of recognition by getting awards, et cetera, from associations, government entities, or professional or business associations, something like that. So any three of these could potentially make you eligible for EB-2. Okay. And it's a good thing to know. This is called EB-2 exceptional ability cases.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that you're going to get it that easily. But in cases where we are desperate and we have no other choice, this is definitely worth something, worth looking at. Keep this in mind.
I mean, in my case, I also mentioned like they applied in an EB-3 in last year, and that got into an audit. Now it is in appeal, under appeal. So, and I'm left with, 6 months of H-1B.
Well, but you know that as long as an appeal is pending, you can keep getting H-1 extensions. That's no problem.
Correct.
And you can apply for an H-1 extension 6 months ahead of time. So apply for an extension now.
Yeah, that's what they're telling, March, as soon as March 1st, they're going to apply for my extension. So, Raju, I don't want to waste everyone's time here. But if I want additional help or your advice on this for the exceptional ability, what is the best way to get in touch with you?
Just send me an email. I just gave you the email address.
I have your rskhana@immigration.com.
Yeah. Just drop me an email. Anything we can do, we'll be happy to assist you. And come back to the next conference call. That way you don't have to pay any money for the consultation. You can just talk to me here.
Okay, sure.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Then the same person, I think, who had a problem with their green card getting approved with some mistakes on them, had also contacted Monica in our office, and Monica has posted the same question. So I'm not going to answer that question again. I answered that already. Next question is a little complicated, from somebody called Better World, who's one of our community members, who wants to know about his friend. Working with previous employer A on H-1B, and the I-94 was valid till November 2012. Joined employer B. Employer B had applied for transfer on May 15th. He joined them on May 15th. The receipt shows May 5th. So he joined them after the receipt, which is legal. Okay. H-1 from employer B got RFE, and then it got denied in July. Okay. I think his unlawful presence and out of status begins on July 11th. Okay? 180 days. Be very careful with this. Even one day over or, any miscalculation, you are in trouble because you will have the 3-year bar. And so, if you look at it, July, August, September, October, November, December, January, we are already, 6 months barred. So July to August is 1 month. September, October, November, December, January. We are already in the 7th month. He already looks like he may already be subject to the 3-year bar. It's not a good idea to take an opinion from me like this. I would want to review everything or get their own lawyers to review everything. But it looks to me like he may already be subject to the 3-year bar. Even though he got employer C to file a case for him on November 20th. Well, you know what? Hang on 1 second. Maybe not. Because November 20th of 2011, he got a case filed. But that was approved. Oh, there was no I-94. Yeah, it looks like he starts his unlawful presence from July 15th. July 10th. Denial on July 10th. Yeah, he never appeared. Yeah, so he definitely, he's subject to the 3-year bar already. And if he continues to stay, he'll become subject to 10-year bar. Okay? Yeah. So how long has my friend been out of status or unlawfully present? Your friend has been unlawfully present, as far as I can see, from July 11th onwards. Okay? What should I do as my next step? I think you need to get yourself a lawyer, go over it, go over your whole case. It looks to me like there's already a bar. Okay. If you go out of the country, you'll be subject to the 3-year bar, but if you stay, then you're subject to the 10-year bar after July 10th, 2012. Okay. What are the options available to me? Difficult to say. It doesn't look like there's a lot of options. You can try to rectify it nunc pro tunc and see if company C's case can be reinstated, but it's a long shot. Not impossible, but a long shot. Will there be a problem in employment-based GC? Yeah, the three-year bar has already kicked in, or it's going to be a problem already. So by the time you get to the green card process, it'll be a 10-year bar. So that's a problem. Not a good situation. Okay. This darn knocking is back. Okay, Shivani, 44. Au pair from Brazil wants to stay here beyond her 2 years and convert to a student visa. First thing you want to know is whether her J-1 visa, I'm assuming she's on a J-1, whether it has a home residency requirement. If it does not, then there is no problem. Okay. But ideally, if she wants to be able to travel to Brazil, the college she wants to go to is willing to do all the paperwork in the U.S. without traveling to Brazil, and she would prefer that option. However, she would also like to visit Brazil once converted to a student visa. Yes. See, if you convert from J to F here, then the consulate could take a position, because if you go to Brazil after that, you have to go to the consulate to get F visa stamping. At that point, the consulate can take the position that you converted from one long-term visa to another, and it looks like you never really intended to come back. So the better thing to do is to then apply for an F visa from Brazil, whether she gets it or not. Okay? And then at least she's in Brazil. If she does not get it, she does not get it, because ultimately F visa is completely at the discretion of the U.S. consulate. Okay? So the right thing to do is, if she wants to have the option of being able to travel to Brazil, then the smartest thing to do is to go ahead and apply for a visa, F1 visa, outside USA. Next question is from BSAC, who wants to know about LCA notice of filing. The problem is they are moving locations, and they want to file the LCA to reflect the new location, but they don't have access to the client's site to post notices. I am very sorry. I don't think I have a solution for you, because unless you post the notice, you are not supposed to file the LCA. Okay? And your employer basically is saying, under penalty of perjury, when they file the LCA, that the posting was made. Okay? Now, the posting can be made ahead of time. So I think as much as, I'm not sure how many, maybe it's up to 6 months. I'm not sure how many months ahead of time, but definitely you can make the posting ahead of time. So if there is access to the client site now, you can try posting now. But there's construction remodeling going on, so really there isn't much I can suggest. All I can say is don't work during that time. When there is a suspense period, just take a leave, preferably a paid leave, because they can't bench you. So don't work during that time. You should be okay. There is also an exception. Your lawyer should look at it, that up to 30 days in 1 year, you can work without an LCA at certain places. So let's just see if that exception applies to you. Okay? GC Good Guy says, I was pending and got married. So the question is, I got married. Now, wife is in India. And how long is it going to take her after I get my green card? And typically, following to join through consular processing can take up to a year, 6 months to a year. So after you get your green card, she might be a few months to come into USA. Now, the problem is he's got two employers. With one, he has an H-1, but he's not working for them. So if he starts working for them, can he bring her on H-4? And the answer is, well, if you are working for both employers, one with EAD and one with H-1, then you are on EAD, not on H-1. Okay? And now, if both employers do an H-1 and you're working on a concurrent H-1, that's fine. You can bring her here on H-4. Okay? Next question is Nitin Mishra. I-140 approved, priority date current, but laid off from work. This is a very sad situation. I-140 is approved, PT is current, but laid off. How much time does he have to transfer H-1B to a new employer? There is no grace period, not even Monday. Based on his approved I-140 from ex-employer, will the new H-1 be issued beyond November 2012? Yes. 3 years. If the new employer agrees to file for a new labor, can he use the prior date from ex-employer? Yes. The job profile does not have to be the same. The only requirement is the old employer does not revoke the I-140. Oh, this knocking sound is driving me crazy. Two more questions left. Let's see if we can get through those. Next week, I might want, or a couple of weeks from now, I might want to try a different service. And the problem with that service is it only allows 5 people to be logged on at the same time. So what we can always do is keep rotating people, I guess. And that's more like a radio call-in kind of thing. So we can try that. If we pay a little bit extra, I think like $100 a month, we can have up to 100 people logged on at the same time. We can try that as well. So we'll see how it goes. This one appears to be a problem. Okay. Consultant 007, I-45 question. I went to AAO. EB-3 got approved. So in his case, what has happened is that his priority date is not getting recaptured. How long will it take to get the I-45 approved? Well, I think what you need to do is, if you're having trouble, they're supposed to, USCIS is supposed to automatically give you the earliest priority date. But you've had it going on for 5 months and they have not given you the priority date. I would open an inquiry with the customer service and or contact the ombudsman's office and see what is going on. If the interfiling was approved, the priority date was approved, everything else was okay, typically your 485 should be approved within 6 months, usually. Okay. Next question, citizenship application. Filing for mom, she had her green card since 1996, but for the first 8-9 months, she stayed mostly in India. She would come for a few months, 3-4 months, and then using re-entry permit every 18 months or so, but she's been staying continuously since 2005. Well, here's what protects you. Because you had a re-entry permit, it should not be a problem. A re-entry permit does protect you to a large extent. So the fact that she was gone so long should not create a problem, because the last 5 years, since 2005, she's been here continuously. So she should be getting her citizenship. The fact that she's a housewife, has no income or income tax, is not a problem. Okay? So regarding the question number 7C, which talks about all the trips outside, I don't think it should be a problem because she had re-entry permit. But if she had no re-entry permit, then they could even question the green card. But remember, if you are a U.S. citizen and she loses her green card, you can always reapply the green card. I'm pretty much done with the questions that were posted. I don't think people can hear me very well. Can you guys hear me?
Hello, Raju. I hear you a little bit, but I think I'm good here.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Raju, this is Lakshmi Narayanan. I know you answered the questions, but because of the knocking sound, I was not able to hear clearly. Sorry about that. But I have a simple, quick follow-up questions.
Let me do this, everybody. Let's just try to log off and log back in, okay? I'm going to try doing that. Just 1 second. Let's just all hang up and call back in.